Welcome to the Days for Girls podcast, a show about breaking barriers for women and girls around the world. I'm your host, Jessica Williams, Chief Communications Officer at Days for Girls International. At Days for Girls, we believe in a world where periods are never a problem. We are on a mission to shatter the stigma and limitations associated with menstruation by increasing access to sustainable period products and menstrual health education for all people with periods. Today's guest is Tanya Safi, an award-winning videographer and storyteller from Lebanon. After working for internet and traditional media companies for 10 years at places like BuzzFeed Video Australia, Tanya has produced everything from native digital entertainment and branded video to feature documentaries on human trafficking in India. Tanya even created a few short documentaries for Days for Girls, which we will talk about in this episode. She is currently the head of video at Happy Media and lives in Australia. I'm excited to share this conversation with you. Now let's go on to the show. All right. So Tanya, it's so great to have you on the Days for Girls podcast. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Of course. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. You filmed and produced a video about Days for Girls in Lebanon. I think it was a year, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago now. And I'm really curious how you got connected to our work. Like, what got you involved in Days for Girls to start with?
Yeah, well, I was living in London at the time, and I had a plan to move back to Lebanon for at least 6 months in order to feature NGOs and change makers in the region who are doing good. So it was in my pre-production for that series that I found Days for Girls, and my mind just blew up. I was so excited. I'd never heard of a mission quite like Days for Girls. It was something that really resonated with me, of course, and I reached out, and we were talking for a few months before I actually landed in Lebanon and I was able to make it happen. But I'm very grateful that I stumbled across such an amazing organization.
Well, we were grateful for your producing that video. It's one of my favorite videos as the Chief Communications Officer. So yeah, I'd love to share it. Yeah, it was really lovely. So tell us, where are you from originally?
I was born in Australia, but I have a mixed Arabic heritage. So we actually recently found out that my grandmother is Egyptian, but a majority of them grew up in Lebanon. But we know that we have some Syrian roots and Palestinian roots, and basically both sides of the family eventually migrated to Lebanon. So it's a part of the world that means a lot to me. And it's a tiny, tiny dot on the map, as I'm sure you know, but the amount of people there that are constantly striving for good and for change and for helping others is just beyond me. I think particularly when I compare it to a place like so-called Australia, where we have so many resources, Lebanon is just going above and beyond constantly for their neighbor. So it's my second home, and I miss it dearly every single day.
And where are you calling us from today?
I am currently based in Sydney. So I moved back to Sydney, which is where I was born, about a year and a half ago after Lebanon. My partner and I were living in Lebanon together, and then we came back here. And of course, everything that went down last year with COVID, it was very lucky in hindsight. But I would still do anything, honestly, to be back in Lebanon continuing with this documentary work.
Yeah, you have quite the impressive career. You were you were hired to kickstart BuzzFeed Video Australia, and you've won some awards for your work with the United Nations, and you've been a real leader for the LGBTQA movement. And I'm curious, what got you into storytelling and video as a medium for telling stories?
I think it was very much the fact of my upbringing and identity, being part of the LGBT+ community and also being Arabic growing up in so-called Australia. Stories like mine just just were never told. You know, I'm sure we've all heard that a lot now, more than ever, but it's just so true. We're talking particularly, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I never saw stories like mine. And the catalyst was actually moving back to Lebanon in my early 20s. And a civil conflict broke into Tripoli, which is where I was living at the time. And the stories that I had from that very awful experience were beyond me. I couldn't put it into words. And it was the first time I kind of came to the realization that, you know, video is probably the most accessible way to go about it. Internet was everywhere by then, of course. You know, everyone was on Facebook and Instagram was kind of just kicking off from memory. And it was a tool. I saw it as a tool to be able to get this story out to as many people as humanly possible. So Lebanon was what made me what I am, a documentary storyteller, which is really sweet and funny at the same time.
Well, you're very good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, we need more of those queer feminist voices and Arab voices in our world. And so I'm glad that you're out there telling your story and the stories of others. Yeah, totally. So one of the things I am really curious about is you identify as queer and you go by they, them. And I'm wondering what your take is on the menstrual health landscape and movement around how we can be more inclusive to those who are non-binary and menstruate. And, you know, at Days for Girls, one of the things that we try to do is try to be inclusive of all menstruators around the world. And every time I go to write the word menstruator, you know, my grammar correction tells me that's not a word. And I, you know, I want this to become a word. I think it should be a word in our dictionary. And I'm curious what your take is on that, if you have an opinion, and if you're willing to go there with me.
Sure. It's funny, I think, because people still aren't comfortable talking about menstruation full stop. So using words like menstruate or period still will make people squirm, whether or not that's here in Sydney or in Lebanon. So it's a really hard thing to tackle because it's always going to make people feel uncomfortable, but ultimately that's really their problem. I tend to go for when I'm talking about menstruation, I tend to say AFAB individuals, but not everyone understands what that is. So that's assigned female at birth. Or quite simply, people who get their period. And I feel like the latter tends to kind of sink into people's minds a little bit more, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's not, I don't try to be apologetic in my language, but it really comes down to the person that I'm speaking to and how much I want something to sink into their minds without them just shutting down completely, you know, because people can be so, they're still thinking of it from such a taboo lens, which is very backward, but that's the reality of the situation. So people who get their period is a very inclusive way, I think, of approaching the situation because it's just straight up the truth.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious from a personal perspective, because I get like you're a storyteller, like on a professional level. And so language is really important to you and how we gather information and stories and then how we distribute that information so that it can be received by others is probably very important to you as a professional. But on a personal level, how does that language affect you?
To be honest, I've never been one to feel shy about anything. Which is why I think I have been able to live the life that I've had, you know, and it's largely because of my upbringing, and I'm very privileged where I live. There's a lot more freedom to use language freely and with experimentation and to not be judged for it. But I still prefer, I think, when we are talking about periods and menstruation that, you know, in my day-to-day conversation, I always, being inclusive is not something that I am trying to tick, you know, it's just something that comes very naturally. But again, that's because of my environment and the exposure that I have to language and the friends that I have. So I tend to just say people who get their period, but I still have some friends who say things like ladies' days, and you know, that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And we are able to have conversations about that. And I, you know, say, well, you know, that's not very inclusive of others or even of myself. But I'm lucky in that I can have those chats, and I'm aware that not everyone has that information. You know, not everyone has even met someone from the LGBT community. Again, when we're talking about refugee settlements in north of Lebanon, I don't expect that language at all. And I think it can come across as very elitist, and it's inconsiderate of others. So I think every conversation, to me, I take in my stride, and I am aware of the context that conversation is brought in the realm that it's in, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I've really enjoyed about researching you ahead of this conversation is that you are really passionate about storytelling through video, and you've told so many stories, and simultaneously, you really want to make a difference in the world. And so I'm curious, why, in your opinion, is video storytelling such a powerful tool to affect change?
I think that video storytelling is such an accessible way of sharing information. That is the key factor of it. Like I said earlier, I see it as a tool, you know, so you can use a tool to build something up or break something down. And some forms of communication can be otherwise, you know, kind of distributed in an echo chamber, and I think that serves a purpose for sure. But video allows a reach beyond our depth. We don't fully understand it, even if we look at the analytics. You know, to be able to share something, even just on my IGTV alone, and see that people in the Philippines are watching it, to get messages from people in Syria, there's a conversation there that I couldn't otherwise be having. So I try to always, you know, use captions as often as I can. You're watching something, you're hearing it, or you're reading it, and it sinks in. You're able to condense such a big subject as much as you can, of course, into a 4 or 5 minute bit of information, which is very hard. But It's a way that I think, especially when we're oversaturated by information more than ever, we're taking in more and more information than we ever have before. Video is still a way that we allow that information to be absorbed without it being potentially, you know, too intimidating or academic or in any other way, I guess, inaccessible. So it's a beautiful thing. The internet, you know, I have mixed feelings about the internet. It can be a really nasty place, of course, but it comes down to how people use it. What it has given us is a form of connection, a new kind of community that we're able to build with storytelling. It's enabled us to hear from people we otherwise didn't know existed, or hear their side of the story that we never were willing to take on earlier. It enables empathy. You know, I think, and it's just stunning. It's amazing. Why not take advantage of that tool and put good things out there?
When you were doing the documentary for Days for Girls in Lebanon, was there anything that surprised you when you were having conversations with the women and girls in the community?
Yeah, it was really lovely to see the older women listening in on the workshops. I didn't really know what to expect in terms of the demographic, I guess. So in Akkar, which is where we were, north of Lebanon, super, super north of Lebanon, We visited several refugee settlements and even a school. So, of course, the school, you know, is full of young girls, which was just adorable. They were so funny and so willing to learn. But then moving on to the settlements, there were some women in there listening up to the age of 80. So that really moved me that they were there, that they wanted to hear, that it was really taken on. There was no hesitation or, you know, there was a bit of like shyness, I guess, around certain topics, but everyone was just so eager to learn and to talk and to converse about something that I think most people assume is maybe more taboo than it is in actuality. Of course, this is in a very safe space where it's all, you know, female identifying people in a tent. So there's probably more freedom to talk. But it was really beautiful to see that there was so much comfortable energy between everyone. And it was like a conversation between friends. And the laughter was just, you know, absolutely contagious. Yeah, it was beautiful. I can't really say anything other than that. Yeah. I never wanted to leave.
So I know COVID has probably affected your ability to get out there and capture video. So what are you currently working on right now?
So I'm currently head of video at a company in Sydney called Happy Media. And it's a news and entertainment company. It's it allows freedom to touch on journalistic pieces, but also kind of balance that between some more entertainment, which, to be honest, for the meantime has been really good for my mental health. COVID was such a tough year. So it's a fine line, you know, balancing telling the important stories and then delving into something a bit more creative and less impactful, but it's been what I've needed for now. It's a bit of respite. I did try to go back to Lebanon, particularly after the Beirut explosion, but my travel request was denied from the government. So that was a shame. I really wanted to go back and help, to volunteer again, to take my camera and help tell stories, but it's not possible for the unforeseeable future. But yeah, you can guarantee I'll be back there soon enough.
So if I know, okay, so I want to do like a thought experiment with you.
Sure.
let's assume like there was no pandemic and the world was back to the normal we knew before all of this went down. And I give you an unlimited amount of money to produce a video series. What story would you want to go out and capture and tell for the world?
Gosh, I would definitely go back and continue the Shwe Shwe series, which is what the Days for Girls documentary was a part of. I was in a very similar mindset at the time. There was a lot more freedom, and I'd saved a bunch of money. I saved everything that I could, and I moved to Lebanon to tell these stories. If I had an unlimited amount, I would 100% continue to do that, not only in Lebanon, of course, but just to bounce around the world where these local communities were affecting change. They weren't just talking about it. They were getting up and doing it, and their stories that we've never seen or heard of before. I would seek them out, hopefully employ some researchers to help me so that the pre-production wasn't all on me. That would be nice. Just to be able to find them, you know, and then make it happen 100%.
Yeah. So tell us more about the Shwe Shwe series.
Shwe Shwe, that's right. Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Yeah. Shwe Shwe means slowly, slowly, or little by little in Lebanese. And why I chose that is that these NGOs or individuals that I found were slowly making change. They were getting up with very little and making the most out of it. So baby steps toward a better world, essentially.
That's really nice. I love it.
Yeah.
That's really nice. So, are there any other like video storytellers in the world that you admire? I'm just curious if there are other people doing work that you think is valuable and contributing in a way that inspires you.
I think there are plenty of journalists that I really admire, but in the same breath, I think we live in a society where it's so hard to kind of just get up and do your own thing, particularly if it's not funded, right? Of course, we all fear financial security and stability. So it is really hard to be an independent journalist, to go into any part of the world, I guess, on your own accord and without any agenda. So it's hard to say. I think a lot of the storytellers that I do admire are working for bigger companies. And to be honest, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt because I think we should. It's always good to be a critical thinker when we read or hear anything. But I think a lot of the journalists that I do love or video producers that I do love, it would be amazing to see them funded to be able to just go out and do their own thing and have that freedom, I guess, without restriction. There are amazing journalists in Australia, for example, like Amy McGuire, who's an Indigenous reporter who I absolutely adore. And it's mostly editorial, you know, written content, but it would be so beautiful to see her context expand and do more video work, because again, I think it would just reach more eyes and ears, particularly worldwide audiences who don't know very much at all about Aboriginal history in so-called Australia.
Amazing. So how can people support you if they want to fund your work, if they want to watch more of your videos, that sort of thing? Where can they find you?
The best way to watch any of my work is on Instagram. So my handle is just at Tanya Safi. And I've got all the Shui Shui videos there, as well as some of my previous work. I did as well a little documentary with Days for Girls for SBS. And that is available on the SBS website, which was a beautiful follow through, actually. So after I'd come back from Lebanon, I pitched this idea to SBS to go visit a prison in Queensland, which is a state just north of where I live, who actually it's a all women identifying prison who actually make the pads that are sent to Days for Girls to distribute around the world. So it was such a nice kind of circle of life almost. Bit of storytelling there, and I love that documentary, so I would love for people to go check that out. I think if you just Google SBS female prison pads, it will come up. I really would encourage people to watch that, because it's such a nice way I interviewed some of the prisoners there as well, which is a very rare opportunity to get in this country, who said that work was just some of the most meaningful work that they've ever done, period, but let alone in a prison where they were given the opportunity to help the world. They also were able to see the Shui Shui documentary in Lebanon, so they got to see where their pads from Queensland were being distributed to Syrian and Palestinian refugees in Lebanon. It was just really affirming to them, so please check that out.
Definitely. And I know that you have that video on your website. So yeah. They could also go to your website, which we will put in the show notes for anyone who wants to check out your work. You're working for Happy Medium right now. Is that your plan while the pandemic's going on, is to kind of stay there and continue that work?
Yeah, I think it's really different terrain here in this country when it comes to video journalism. So for now, it's a bit of a tough fight, to be honest. It's hard for people to really land those positions, but I'm lucky in that, like I said, you know, we do have freedom to tell journalistic pieces. I did do one on the favorite explosion, for example, and I would love to be doing more of that, but it's still a really small team, so in time, as we grow, more and more storytelling will happen. Don't be worried. It's my bread and butter, you know, it's my heart. It's what keeps me alive. So if I haven't helped tell a story in a while, I just slowly disintegrate.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and for your time today. And we'll put all those links in the show notes to your website and your Instagram and everything so the listeners can find you there.
Awesome, Jessica. Thank you so much. And thank you for all the wonderful work you all do.
You're welcome. The Days for Girls podcast is produced by Days for Girls International. For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit daysforgirls.org/podcast. If you'd like to support the work we do on the show, leave a rating or a review wherever you listen, subscribe to the show, and share episodes on social media or with your friends. To learn more about Days for Girls and to join our global movement, please visit daysforgirls.org. Thank you for listening. See you next time.